Thank you very much, Frank. I have been told that I should speak for 10 minutes, so I'm getting out my watch to make sure that I don't go a minute over. I think it's very nice and generous on the part of the Philadelphia Society to invite me tonight. You know, I was many years ago a member of the Philadelphia Society. Indeed, I was on the board of trustees. However, after my first term, I was not reappointed. And I think it's very generous on the part of the Society, after what must have obviously been a disastrous performance, that I should be invited this evening to speak to you for 10 minutes. As you know, I was awarded this Nobel Prize last October, but you can have no idea of what happens to you after you get this thing. Your correspondence increases such that it's hard even to read it, let alone answer it. And in fact, I haven't answered a lot of it. It just goes on and on, and of course you get all these letters asking you your opinion on various things, and letters asking you for money. The one that most appealed to me was somebody who wrote to me from India, saying that he wanted this money in order that he should get married to the mother of his children. I almost gave him the money. It seems such a worthy thing to do. Now, as some of you may know, that I didn't learn about this getting this prize when all of you knew about it, because I was in Tunisia, where I'd gone in order to buy a birdcage. I arrived on Sunday, bought my birdcage on Monday, and then visited the Museum of Carthage. I was staying at Carthage, you know the ancient city, and because we had a friend, a Fulbright scholar, who was working in the museum there. Well, we were there in Tunisia, in Carthage, and apparently I was awarded this Nobel Prize. Well, no one knew where I was, you see. And the Nobel Foundation was searching all over the world for us. Finally, we were found, not some 30 hours afterwards. I received a telephone call. And who do you think found us? Was it the Nobel Foundation? No. It was a profit-making organization. Reuters news agency, who had an interest in getting this scoop. He phoned he phoned the hotel and then came out to the hotel with a photographer, and we were then taken out to the ruins which were nearby, and we were photographed. I'd not had, of course, these politicians and so on are used to this. These photographers say, sit there. stand there, stand in front of that statue. And they said to my wife, congratulate your husband. So she kissed me. They immediately took a photograph. The photographers told me that he sold that all over the world. It was a very extraordinary experience. The news that I had been found was, of course, flashed all over the world. But someone in Sweden told me of the headline there, which I must say was my favorite among the headlines. It said, Nobel Prize winner found in ruins. And here we were staying in this hotel in Carthage in Tunisia. The next days were simply full. The lounge of the hotel was full of reporters coming to ask me questions. Television crews turned up. I was photographed, filmed, and Lord knows what. It was the most terrifying experience. For one thing, you must understand this. In Tunisia, they either speak Arabic or French. They don't understand English. Well, at the end of the period, my French had improved considerably. I had television interviews in French and lots of interviews with the press. Of course, they asked me all sorts of questions. You're supposed to know everything when you win a Nobel Prize. They ought to know more about economists than they obviously do. But they would ask me questions. Didn't I think that aid should be given to the Third World? Well, that wasn't a difficult one. I said no. And they asked me about what was going to happen in Eastern Europe and what the prospects were in Russia. I said they were very bad. I was quite pessimistic about what would happen in Russia. You know, if you're going to have a market, you have to have the institutions that make a market possible, and they didn't have them, and I didn't see how they were going to create them, and I foresee great difficulties. Well, this is the sort of thing that went on. Of course, Tunisia isn't normally in the world spotlight. They'd never appeared before. Well, the last time was when the Israelis went in and shot up the headquarters of the PLO. But apparently my visit was of greater interest than that. And I got invited. Of course, I had to have dinner with my wife and I. We had to have dinner with the American ambassador and the Swedish ambassador and the British ambassador, and a big dinner was held for us by the Minister of the Economy, and that was a very grand affair at a big hotel. And as we were walking in to that, the Minister of the Economy said, I'll introduce you briefly and then you can make your speech. Of course, I hadn't heard anything about having to make a speech, which of course had to be given in French. Which was improving a bit by then, actually. I also gave a lecture at the University of Tunis in French. But all this sort of thing went on, and it was an interesting occasion. There were all the big businessmen and academics of Tunisia sitting in front of me, and I talked a bit. And at the end of it, my wife and I stood there, and all the guests, about 150, went back and shook our hands, because I'm not used to doing that sort of thing. But anyway, we did, and then they departed, and then we went out to leave, and all the people that were at the dinner were all on the terrace of the hotel, and they were all waving at us, and then we got into this limousine and so on. Very difficult to know what to do when a lot of people are waving at you. So we did the King and Queen act. That's about all you can do in those circumstances. Of course, we also were invited to see the president of Tunisia. We couldn't leave him out. We were taken in a big car, and a motorcyclist was in front honking all the populace out of the way. And we went to his presidential palace, a very grand affair, like something out of the Arabian Nights. And we went there, and we saw, of course, there'd been negotiations beforehand. The president didn't want to speak in English, and he said, would it be all right if the interview was conducted in French? And by that time, I said, oui. Anyway, we continued, and I saw the president, who was Ben Ali, who was a very nice chap, actually, very intelligent fellow. My views, of course, about Tunisia and what should be done, and foreign aid and all that sort of thing, had been published in all the newspapers. There were whole pages there, and I very much liked the headline, which was in the main paper of Tunisia. It was a quote from me: "People who depend on others have no future." That sort of summed up what I'd my advice to the Tunisians. Well, the president, who said somewhat surprisingly that he agreed with my views, and in fact, and this is of interest, really serious interest to people in the Philadelphia Society, I found an awful lot of people among the academics, businessmen and politicians, who also thought the same thing, thought this business of trying to rely on what people give you from outside, there's no future to it. You've got to depend on yourself. And so they agreed to it. Now, they no doubt have political difficulties. People here have political difficulties in putting over that point of view too. But the president was very nice. He said how nice it was to be a professor, and how much he enjoyed the time before he was president and had been an electrical engineer, and how he'd visited the United States, and you know, he gave you the feeling that somehow or other he'd become president by accident. Although the number of soldiers around the presidential palace suggested he didn't want another accident too soon. Anyway, all this sort of thing went on. I could continue with my problems in Tunisia. Very interesting. In Stockholm too, but you have another speaker, and I've already gone over 10 minutes. Thank you.